Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football on Macquarie Radio, NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. A week into the new year, and as always, there is no shortage of football news to talk about on the show this week. First up, Michael Huguenin, Chief Editor of Goal.com Australia, the Australian edition of Goal.com. He joins us to talk through the A-League in the domestic game off the park before our A-League analyst, Dean Annesy, goes through the weekend's Round 14 action. Several feature interviews on the show this week, including founding coach of the Central Coast Mariners, Laurie McKenna, to give us his insight into the ongoing troubles at his former club, and Australia's leading player and match agent, Lou Sticker from Tribal Sports Management, will give us his views on the challenges facing the A-League at the moment and some of the tough decisions the FFA needs to make to maintain the growth of the domestic game over a decade since the demise of the NSL. And while football is what Box to Box is all about, this week former Australian Test and One Day International cricketer Carl Rackerman will tell us just how football's biggest summer competitor, cricket, has unleashed one of its greatest success stories, the Big Bash, onto the Australian sporting landscape and what football can learn from its massive growth in terms of TV ratings and crowds. And of course, Ben Sorrow Perez will talk everything else that is Europe before Mark Van Aken wraps it up with Stoppage Time. Edge, good to see you, mate.
Hi, Rob. Good to be back and looking forward to a great show ahead, in particular, Laurie McKenna and Lou Sticker. Both gentlemen have got great history in the game. They span the old NSL and the new A-League, and I'm sure their views, Laurie on Central Coast and Gosford, and Lou on what's happening in the A-League with marquee players and a potential promotion and relegation maybe well into the future. Really interesting topics, Rob.
A lot to get through, and more importantly, a lot to get through right now with Mark Van Aken. Mark?
Thanks, Rob. Mike, former Socceroo Brett Holman is keeping the A-League in mind as a possible career destination, but he's in no hurry to cut short a 13-year football odyssey across the globe, reports The World Games' David Lewis. Holman, 31, is out of contract with UAE-based club Emirates in June and is yet to discuss his future with club officials. I would be more than happy to stay, says Holman, but if something came up in Australia, Japan or China, then that's something I've haven't pursued up to now, but they're all exciting prospects. Do we want to see Brett Holman back in the A-League, boys?
I think we do. He was a much maligned Socceroos, but I've got fond memories of him in 2010 in South Africa.
I was going to say he was maligned, except for when he was the star of the World Cup for the Socceroos. Melbourne Victory striker Besart Berisha is still holding out hope he might be called up for Albania's historic appearance.
For who?
At Albania. You're a Heidelberg fan, I think you'd know about Albania. A historic appearance at UEFA Euro 2016 in France. I'm getting some hate mail after the show.
You certainly are.
And mainly from you. The 30-year-old has 17 caps for the national team, the latest in 2009 as part of the country's failed bid for the 2010 World Cup. Now, boys, he's failed to make himself available for Albania since he's moved to the A-League in 2011. So he's happy for the other lads to do the heavy lifting. He's been called the Albanian salesman by Ante Kovic last week. Is he now going to be the Albanian Steve Bradbury?
Oh, for sure. Look, I mean, he's good value.
But you can't just put your hand up once you've made the tournament, can you?
You can.
Well, Besart, can we?
You can.
Let's not forget, Harry Kewell made himself unavailable for a number of years.
Too many games.
For about a decade,
But then when he did eventually come good, he helped deliver us to the 2006 World Cup.
So. Now, we'll touch on Harry in a second, Rob. But, of course, last night we saw the Liverpool legends in action against the Socceroos, or the Australian legends, last night at ANZ Stadium. Luis Garcia had a double and a goal for Ian Rush at 54 years young. And I actually loved Tony Pignata, the CEO of Sydney FC, tweeting after the game, "Hey, Ian Rush, what are you doing for the next 14 weeks?
But where was Harry? Could have played for both teams. Well, where was he?
Well, he's playing for neither. He's, of course, at Watford coaching their under-21s, I think.
You reckon he could have got a couple of days off?
Nah, mate. No, in all seriousness. You're being facetious, Mike.
No, I just want you to talk like Harry Kewell.
No. Again, Harry has got a real job to do at Watford, and he's doing it. Anyway, how about John Aldridge? 57 years young as well. So it's a bit disturbing, Rob, that we had a really good former Socceroos. There are a few oldies like Rob, how can I forget his name?
Robbie Slater,
that's the one.
How did Craig Foster go?
Fozzie pre-game. If anyone's seen the footage, it was clearly, obviously, innocent. But wow, if you've seen the footage, Fozzie, please explain. Anyway,
Zelko did well. He kept Zelko as well as he did in the 2006 World Cup.
He wasn't playing Croatia this time. But anyway, look, we did get a little bit of an insight before the game from the Reds manager Gerard Ulia. This is his pre-game talk. I love it.
A few things. No food, no drink restrictions.
Please give me this. You
No curfew. And everybody will play. Even you, Robbie. No, I hope we enjoy it. And the only thing I need is from you is enjoy yourself. But once we get into the football activity, you do the things right, because that's a way to enjoy it. We're here for that. Great. Thank you.
The great man, Gerard Houllier, of course, coached Liverpool to a UEFA Cup victory. But one Australian inverted commas journalist, Constantine Acostas, a blogger from 442, asked him at a presser this week why he subbed Harry Kewell in the Champions League final back in 2005.
And what was his answer?
His answer was, I wasn't the manager. That was Rafa Benitez, Con. Try again, big fella. Anyway, moving on. Eva Canero's case for constructive dismissal against Chelsea got underway on Wednesday as she appeared at a preliminary hearing at the London South Employment Tribunal. The 42-year-old was dropped as first-team doctor, of course, you'll remember, boys, by the Premier League champions following a row with then-manager Jose Mourinho during the season-opening draw at Swansea at Stamford Bridge. Wednesday's hearing was to determine a timetable for the constructive dismissal case, likely to be heard in full in June. Can't wait for that.
She'll win.
You reckon?
But yeah,
she'll win in spades. I think she's not going to have to worry about working for the rest of her life.
Make her the coach. They need one.
Absolutely. So, look, plenty of news. I'll be back in stoppage time because I've got plenty more to talk about. Big show. Looking forward, as Mike said, Lou Sticker, the doyen of management in this country, and Laurie McKenna, the burgermeister up there in Gosford.
And you were going to talk about Anthony Caceres, but I know that Michael Huguenin is going to refer to that in his segment coming up after the break.
Yep.
We certainly do. So Michael Huguenin is going to come up next, the chief editor of Goal Australia, to talk about the A-League news off the pitch on Box to Box. And we're looking forward to having him on the show for the first time with a lot of his insights from the inside of the World Game.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box, and welcome also for the first time to Box, Michael Huguenin. In November, Michael was appointed chief editor of Goal Australia after 10 years working in the Australian media as a football journalist on radio and print, and he is an authority on the A-League. Great to have you on the show, Michael.
Thanks a lot, Rob, and good to be here to chat with you guys tonight. And hello to you, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. Let's start with, there's going to be plenty of Central Coast Mariners fans driving home from work, maybe listening to the show. We want to obviously focus in what's happened this week. Obviously, tonight they have a huge game against Melbourne Victory in Geelong, a home game. But before that, Roy O'Donovan, take us through what's happened there, because that is big news.
Yeah, well, look, I guess this has been the story of the week in the A-League as far as I've been concerned, and I think for many. If you haven't already seen it, I would imagine that you've probably been living under a rock somewhere, but Roy O'Donovan headbutt on Wellington Phoenix defender Manny Muscat on the New Year's Eve game up in Gosford, was initially given a yellow card, then came out afterwards when he was supposedly going to apologise and instead said that Manny Muscat went down like a Hollywood star, I think it was. And, the penalty came out during the week, and he's been given 8 weeks, which for many has seemingly been over the top. It's the second longest penalty in A-League history, and 8 games, I mean, there's only 27 rounds in the season. It's, almost a third. It's a very long time, but this is completely unacceptable behaviour. If you've seen it, people are talking about that he might have been provoked by Manny Muscat. But as we all know, having watched a lot of football, you can get provoked all the time, and it's often the guy who retaliates who gets more of a penalty anyway. And regardless of being provoked or not, walking up essentially behind someone and headbutting them in the sort of side or back of the head, in my opinion, when I saw the initial penalty, it didn't really stun me. I just kind of went, well, it's pretty disgraceful behaviour, and an 8-game penalty probably underlines that for me.
So, Michael, the case for the defence, if we were supporting O'Donovan, we would have said he was provoked. We would have said he didn't make great contact. It wasn't potentially not a vicious headbutt. Is he being hard done by, or is it just 8 weeks, copy fair whack, move on?
I guess my argument to that would be that What is a not a vicious headbutt? Like, not a vicious headbutt is when, you know, the two players sort of lean their foreheads against each other and kind of stare down stare at each other. I think in this situation, he's moved his head back and swung it forward to make contact. You know, in my opinion, that's a vicious headbutt.
The provocation?
Provocation is not, I don't really know whether that makes much of a difference. I mean, you know, you provoked. It wasn't like he didn't retaliate immediately. He retaliated.
I think that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, it's 10 seconds or whatever it is afterwards. He's had time to think. If he gets hit by the elbow and he lashes back with an open palm or something like that, you know, that's what I would term retaliation. This is more sort of revenge best served cold in some respects. And look, he had time to think about what he wanted to do. He decided to do this. We don't want to see this in the game at all. Could it have been six games? Perhaps it could have been six games, but, you know, it needed to be some sort of big statement, and eight games is a big statement.
Yeah, look, personally, I think eight games is fair. It's not a patch on the biggest punishment that a player ever received for the most famous headbutt in football history, Zinedine Zidane, famously on Marco Materazzi in the 2006 World Cup final. Not only did he get a red card, but his team lost the World Cup final, and at least his entire career didn't go down the plug hole as a result of that, but it was a fair punishment for that kind of headbutt. So I think Roy O'Donovan should count himself lucky, come back in 8 weeks' time if he's still welcome, and make sure that he doesn't do it again.
Absolutely, Michael. After their first win since round one for the Mariners, it's the last thing they need. And now they're hosting Melbourne Victory in Geelong tonight. What are your thoughts on concept of clubs selling home games? Because obviously that's what's happened here.
Yeah, look, I guess the first element to this answer is that I have no inside knowledge about, you know, how much money may have exchanged hands and all that kind of thing. You know, it's clearly been a decision made by the Mariners for the bottom line, and they're entitled to, you know, look at their budget and try and work it out. But I guess without knowing the exact figures, you know, it's sort of hard to justify it one way or the other. But my essential take on it is that we keep getting told that, you know, the A-League clubs, they're trying to build their brands, they're trying to get people interested in the game, get people interested in their clubs, you know, want to buy their shirts, want to turn up to their games. You know, it's clearly a bit of a struggle at the moment getting people to turn up to games and to watch games on TV. To me, it doesn't really make sense then that you take your home games and you go and play it somewhere else where, you know, Geelong isn't going to suddenly turn into some sort of Mariners enclave, or I think that's incredibly unlikely. So, you know, we've seen other examples of this kind of stuff where teams have seemingly, you know, they're given a chance to potentially develop their brand, and then they seem to go down another bizarre route that doesn't, to me, make complete sense. I'm no marketing guru, but, you know, it doesn't really fit for me. I guess it'd be interesting to hear your guys' take on it. But, you know, for example, when Wellington Phoenix went to Auckland this season, and then they played in a different kit. Now, it was supposed to be New Zealand-inspired, but surely they should be trying to, you know, strengthen the Wellington Phoenix brand. And being Wellington Phoenix is black and yellow, isn't it? Mm.
Absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. Some of these decisions seem to fly in the face of logic, don't they, mate? Now, we want to jump onto another point that we've got. We're going to talk to Lou Sticker in the second hour of the show, but we've seen players like Georgios Samaras talked about, Ronaldinho, Robbie Keane, Nicholas Anelka, as you ran exclusively with on goal.com. Can you talk us through this point of the marquee talent? Does the A-League, the Hyundai A-League, need an injection of marquee talent to step it up to another level of interest with the, let's say, not just the traditional football supporter, but the theatre goer?
Yeah, look, it's tough. I guess sometimes when, you know, you and I who watch a lot of football, we might get a little bit turned off on this sort of concept of the guest player or, you know, the big name marquee player who, let's face it, is always going to be slightly on the other side of the hill. They're going to be, you know, heading down that slope, and they're going to be somewhere on that slope. We hope they're not at the bottom, but, you know, it's always a little bit difficult because we kind of like perhaps the league to be able to stand on its own two feet or even not have to bring in the guys who are sliding down that slippery slope of the final few years of their career. But, you know, maybe they're only 31, 32 and you know, can give us plenty of years of top quality football. But the reality is that we don't have the money in the game at the moment for that kind of stuff, and or that kind of player, sorry. And the other issue is that, you know, the crowds are effectively stagnating, the ratings are not great, the Big Bash is flying in the cricket world, and that's become a direct competitor for the A-League. I do think that an injection of a couple of guest players in this January transfer window, or maybe some new marquee talent, you know, it would be a good thing for the league. It sells papers, it sells tickets, you know, we would be talking about it. The A-League has never been more globally interesting than when Alessandro Del Piero went to Sydney FC. You know, people who had almost never heard of the competition before suddenly knew what it was. With no promotion relegation, with no expansion on the horizon, in my opinion, the A-League has become a little bit bland. And, you know, it's not easy for coaches and it's not easy for directors of football to deal with guest players, because especially if they only come in for a month, you know, can you be certain of them being fit and all that kind of thing? But right now I'm not exactly sure whether we can not try it out.
We're listening to Michael Huguenin, the chief editor with Goal.com here in Australia. Michael, just before we wrap it up, there's one item that I want you to reflect on and maybe share a bit of news with us. We know you've got the ear to the ground. January transfer window is open for business. What can we see in the A-League?
Yeah, look, it's going to be an interesting time. So far, the club that's been the busiest has been the Central Coast Mariners. We've talked about them a lot tonight. And very much looking forward to seeing how maybe some of their new faces do against Melbourne Victory tonight. They probably need new players more than anyone else, but the biggest question for me going into the January transfer window is how the few teams that are just sitting behind the leaders in Brisbane Roar and Western Sydney, so that's Melbourne City, Sydney FC and Melbourne Victory, can they make the signings that's going to see them bridge that gap towards the sort of in the second half of this season? It kind of looks like Melbourne City might be lining up Anthony Caceres of the Central Coast Mariners. There's a lot of talk of him going to Manchester City at the moment, but as we're talking now, it seems that that's not going to be likely because he doesn't have a British passport, he doesn't have a European passport. So don't expect him to go to Europe, but it could be that they sign him and then loan him back to Melbourne City or some sort of deal like that. He would be fantastic for City because, as we saw last week, when Aaron Moy's out, they really don't have an answer in the attacking midfield slot. Robbie Coren doesn't seem to have the ability anymore. Sydney desperately need a striker, and Graham Arnold rejigged his squad very well at this point last season, which took them all the way to the grand final. I wouldn't be surprised if Arnie has a trick or a deal up his sleeve that he's trying to get done. Melbourne Victory, perhaps it's just a form thing. Maybe they don't actually need that many reinforcements, but Kevin Muscat hasn't seemed that keen on signing anyone. They have brought in Jai Ingham, a young player who looks like he's going to be effectively a sort of cover for Connor Payne while Payne is away with the Olyroos. But for me, that's the interesting part. It's those teams who are just behind the leaders who maybe only need one player to take them to that next step, whether they can sign that type of player so that they can become genuine title contenders.
Michael, fantastic stuff, mate. We'll watch this January transfer with interest, and we'll surely have you back on the show again, Chief Editor of Goal Australia. Michael, thanks for joining us on Box to Box.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Michael.
Dean Hennessy with his weekly A-League Wrap next.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app and also on TuneIn Radio. And now for his analysis of round 14 of the A-League, former Notts County man and 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League, Dean Hennessy. Welcome back, Dean.
Hello, Rob, and hello, Edge.
Hello, Dino.
Yes.
Big match tonight.
Big match.
At Simmons Stadium. So this one is, when you look at the A-League fixture, it shows it's a Central Coast match.
But obviously, it's being played in the veritable backyard of the Melbourne Victory.
It is. I mean, look, it is a Central Coast home game, and obviously there's been some device there that's triggered that. But I look back to Victory's...
I think the device is money, Dean.
It could be. Could well be. But I remember Victory's game down there last year, and they struggled.
They did.
At Simmonds Stadium. Perth, you know, really took the game to them down there, and... It's always one of those where I suppose it's not their home game, so you know at least they've played there before. Mariners haven't. Mariners, though, buoyant after a great 4-1 win. Unfortunately, overshadowed by the Donovan situation. But again, great win for Victory. They needed to get back, and I thought they played quite well last week. Made hard work of it. I thought Newcastle were good, but... At least Victory back to winning ways.
And we're going to talk to Laurie McKenna after we finish chatting with you, Dean, and you're going to stick in with that segment. The Central Coast Mariners, before we chat to Laurie, in a world of pain.
Yeah, it is. Look, there's a whole lot going on there with their performances so far this year. I mean, maybe the 4-1 win shows a little bit of a glimmer of light. I mean, it's a convincing win. But then, you know, all that good work goes out the window where just somebody just reacts to a situation where things happen on the football pitch all the time, but you just can't do that, you know, and people talk about if it happened on the street, you know, you'd be in major trouble.
And he seemed to justify his own behaviour afterwards, talking about him going down like a Hollywood superstar.
Yeah, look, really poor form, and I think if he had his time again, he'll regret it.
So do you know who you tipping?
Look, I think now Victory are back on song. I mean, I know they've got a few boys out with, obviously, this Ollie Roo trip. For a lot of them, there's a boy, Jai Ingham, who played for Hume City this year and had a really good cup campaign in the FFA Cup. He's joined the squad, so I think he's in the travelling party. I just think even though Central Coast won last week, they are technically away from home or interstate. I fancy Victory to keep the winning ways and stay in touch with everybody.
OK, on Saturday, ANZ Stadium, Sydney FC and Newcastle Jets. Before we go into great detail about the match of the day, Melbourne City, Western Sydney Wanderers, what are your thoughts on Sydney and Newcastle?
Sydney, who should have flogged City last weekend.
Unbelievable. I was at the game. It was one of the most one-sided first halves. And Sydney, while they weren't three or four up before they went 1-0 down, it was amazing. But, you know, again, good goalkeeping from Sorensen like he does every week. And some maybe better finishing might have been the big difference. But I thought overall, if you look at the 90-minute performance of Sydney FC, apart from the two goals they conceded, I thought they were really good. And I thought they played some of the best football I've seen this season in the A-League. So Newcastle, I thought they put up a good, you know, for me, a really good stout performance against Victory. They were competitive.
It was a scrappy game though,
wasn't it? Yeah, it is. Yeah. It was. And look, and I just think now Sydney FC back at home, I just think I can't see anybody winning but Sydney.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go to the match of the round then. This is a big one. Melbourne City and Western Sydney Wanderers at Amy Park. Kick off 7:30 p.m. tomorrow night in Melbourne. Let's just break it down. Let's, Dino, John Van Schip, 32 goals, 22 conceded. They can score for fun, Melbourne City. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, that's the major. I mean, they're the top goal scorers in the league. You know, former Ole has been outstanding. Obviously, Aaron Moy's not there at the moment, and I'm not sure whether he'll come back again this week. So, you know, that might be another week, possibly two, but I'm not convinced on that. I'm not sure. I know Harry Novillo, he came great back to form last week, and he was really most probably one of the catalysts of what kept them in it. So I think they're going to be relying on them. I think Sorensen played really, really well and kept them in it, but I thought it, to be honest, he was at fault for the second goal. You know, it seemed to hang in the air for a long, long time, and it was uncharacteristic of him. I think the way John Van Schip's team, he'll go out there with, like, he knows he's going to score goals. I think if he doesn't shore up his defence and he doesn't get the back four set up and the midfield to quell what obviously is going to be the thrust from West Sydney Wanderers, who are the informed team, I think it's going to be a really hard evening for them. So I think unless they get the defensive set up right, we know they'll score goals even if they're not in the game like they proved last week. I think looking, if you look now to the Western Wanderers, I mean, they come to the table in unbelievable form. I mean, their story tells the same. 10 goals conceded, you know, the best defensive team in the league. Three out of the last four have been clean sheets. Since the last time these two met, they've won 8 and drawn 2. They haven't got beaten. So it's a 10-game run plus that victory. So they're in tip-top form. Little bit of a blip last week. They couldn't break Adelaide down, which surprised me. They did have chances, but I thought Adelaide, you know, I think they've turned the corner. But I just think the confidence they'll go in there, I think if you look at the way they construct their goals, most of their goals come down the right-hand side through Castellin. They've also got a really good support on the left-hand side. And I think unless they get the defensive setup, which I know Matty Miller played last week for Melbourne City, who's obviously one of my boys, he really had a hard time towards the end of the game. You know, I think he lost his leg, and I think they miss people like Franichen with that experience, but good experience for him. I think tactically, Popper will go back on this solid foundation, you know, and that's why, and I think every game he's gone into, even though they've got such a great attacking edge, they don't look like they're going to concede goals. They are vulnerable, though, and I will point out that most of their goals that they've conceded are from set plays. So if there's an opportunity, and John Van Schip's been working on the training ground, recognising that, set pieces, they're vulnerable, and they've conceded six of the 10 goals so far this season.
We're talking to Dean Hennessy on NTS News Talk Sport. This is Box to Box and the all-important prediction. Dino, you've given us the analysis. Who is going to win? Will there be a winner?
Look, again, a tight affair. And I predicted that last week, which it was. But again, if they've got no Moy, I think then it's going to be really uphill when I fancy the Wanderers. If Moy comes back into the team, I think that evens it up and that could more slant it more to a draw. But I want to stay with the team for me who are in form along with Brisbane. And I think Tony Popovich are doing a fabulous job this year, and I fancy the Wanderers.
And I really hope we see a good crowd at Amy Park on Saturday night. That's key. I mean, there wasn't a great crowd against Sydney last week. The Melbourne City fans, if they're out there, they need to start turning up. And Melbourne City as a club needs to do something about that issue, because it is really the elephant in the room in this competition, isn't it?
I mean, if I can just touch on that, there was 10,000, where normally they're averaging around the 7-8 mark. So there is an increase now. The performance wasn't bad last week, and there was a great chance they could have won it had they not conceded late. So I agree with you. I think it's vital. If we can get 14, 15,000 to it and really like start to set a benchmark and they get a result, then, you know, obviously then there's a second team in Melbourne that's going to bring crowds.
OK, and there's a late match on Saturday night. This is going to be a big one. Perth won't have given up hope on finals football, and Adelaide are on the very fringe of the top six. May be able to edge out the Wellington Phoenix with a win away in Perth.
Yeah, look, Perth have been dogged for the last 3, 4, 5 weeks. They've now got Andy Keogh back, subject to an international clearance. He's named on the bench. Again, I'm assuming whether that's already that's the squad they're thinking or whether it's actually official. But he will make a big difference. I mean, with Jamie McLaren last year coming on off the bench, and Andy Keogh, that's why he couldn't get a game and start, and that's why he wanted to leave to go and play first-team football. This boy was scoring goals week in, week out. So if he can then give the cutting edge where they, if they do get beat, they only get beat by one. I thought Adelaide performance at Western Sydney Wanderers last week was excellent, and they're playing some really good football, and I think they're one of the informed teams as well, albeit not maybe converting some of the results from draws and trying to convert them from draws to wins. I think Adelaide will win, but again, Andy Keogh could be a big factor.
Adelaide to win in Perth from Dean. That's interesting. Sunday's game is a game in New Zealand. It's Wellington and Brisbane Roar. Brisbane Roar just taking each game as it comes and dealing with the opposition quite comfortably at the moment. Can they go to New Zealand and get a win?
Oh, without doubt. I mean, Wellington would be licking their wounds from last week, 4-1 defeat to the bottom
not
team.
Good,
Not good. I mean, that's, if you get beat 1-0 and you're a bit unlucky, I get it, but 4-1's a paste in anyone's language. They also lose Manny Muscat, you know, so again, that's a defender, obviously, with the same incident, what we've already covered. But for me, it's only one team. Brisbane are the informed team along with the Wanderers. They're good defensively, they're organised, they're very creative in midfield, and they've got strike force at scoring goals. And, you know, with Jamie McLaren's form, another goal again last week. I know we talk about him, but, you know, the top goal scorers, Formaroli on 11, Berisha on 8, McLaren on 7, Krishna on 6, and Aaron Moy on 6. You know, there's quite a gap between those two. So, I mean, for me, I think there's a really, really big chance that Brisbane can go on a run and continue this run all the way to the finals.
Absolutely. Hey, not bad again, Dino. It's a pretty good analysis of round 14 in the A-League, Rob.
Oh, absolutely. And for somebody who didn't play at the highest level like myself, I know, Ed, you were an elite player yourself. But look, I love to not only to watch the games and be entertained, but also love to listen to analysis and then to reflect on the analysis as I'm watching the game to pick apart the tactics of the different games. And that's what I enjoy about your work, Dana.
I think the thing, the way I look at it now and the way we've started to analyse games is there's lots of trends that, you know, there's 13 weeks of data that we look at and we view. And albeit no two games are ever the same, what you do find is the trends that are really good. So I think we'll just continue on that and hopefully my prediction will come true. Hopefully,
good work, Notts County, man.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dino. Well, look, stick around because after the break, we're going to be joined by your old mate, Laurie McKenna from the Central Coast, the mayor of the Central Coast, the founding coach of the Central Coast Mariners, because they are in all sorts of drama up there and we want to hear what he has to say. And that is after the break on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. Thanks to our very good friends at Chemist Warehouse on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app. You can also search for NTS on TuneIn Radio. And when the initial eight A-League clubs were announced on November 1, 2004, the Central Coast Mariners were far and away the minnow of the competition. But under Laurie McKenna, they immediately proved themselves giant killers. During the McKenna-Graham Arnold eras, the Mariners were a powerhouse on the park, winning two premierships and one championship from four grand finals. Now, we've focused on several of the success stories of the 2015-16 season on Box to Box so far, but we're also determined to get to the bottom of how one of the league's most successful clubs have come to sit stone motherless last on the ladder without a hope of finals just over halfway through the current season. Laurie, thanks for joining us.
No problem, pleasure.
Laurie, I want to ask you a question first. We're a national program, so for people that live outside of Gosford or that part of the Central Coast in New South Wales, can you just explain the local environment that Central Coast Mariners draw their fans from, Gosford, other areas, what it's like? You've had such a long involvement there, but that just will set the scene for some other questions.
Yeah, well, the Central Coast comprises of Wyong Council and Gosford Council, two council areas, about 320,000 population across both. Gosford's got 170,000. We do draw some fans from the Hornsby and north of Sydney area. Obviously, we don't get many from Newcastle because they hate our guts after their three derbies. And it's a real laid-back city or town. And when the club got started 11 years ago, it was predominantly a rugby league team, a rugby league town. The Central Coast football, we've roughly got about 14,000, 15,000 registered players now. And since that was probably about 8,000 or 9,000 when the Mariners started. So it's by far the biggest participation sport on the coast for all kids, boys, girls, and over 35s, 45s, and over 50s like myself.
You really did establish, you yourself, Laurie, and your involvement in the club really did help establish the brand, its position in the market there. People from outside the area, like myself, who love our football, love the A-League, I must admit, it's been a bit of a horror story the last couple of years. Can you just take us through the dot point? You know, what's happened, the change of ownership, the change of culture? And because it looks from afar looking in that the club is really missing some local community connectivity at the moment.
Yeah, look, I was there for 5 years then. I was general manager of football for a year. I worked getting Arnie to the club. So worked well with Arnie for the first year then. I went to China for a year to coach over there in the Chinese Super League, and then I come back as general manager of football with Arnie again. And under Arnie, the club was successful. You know, 3 years they made two grand finals and they won one grand final. I made two grand finals, never won one. But when Arnie came to the club, he was successful on the park, but he wasn't too keen on all the promotional stuff that we'd done over the years, because we became part of the community. And Arnie came in and he got what he wanted, and the players weren't in the community as much, but the team was successful, so that momentum carried on. The crowds dropped a little bit. So if you go through the crowds, you look, only 3 years the crowds were down on the 5 years I was there, just slightly, but they were probably, because they won a grand final, they were a little bit more successful. But then Phil Moss came in, so he's Arnie's assistant. Mossy came in and tried to continue on what Arnie was doing, basically, and which was not much in the community, probably a bit big-time Charlie-ish. and they never had the results. So straight away, the crowds dropped dramatically, straight away. Then Tony Walmsley came into the club. He came back. He used to be my youth team coach. He was working on the owner of the club, Mike Charlesworth, and he came back as director of football. And then apparently sacked Mossy and appointed himself as the coach. And I think his record was 21 games, 4 wins, 3 draws, and the rest he's lost them. So he's not been successful in the park.
So, Laurie, it seems to be what you're saying is that that alongside of the lack of success on the pitch in recent times, one of the key issues around the lack of success in terms of drawing crowds has been the lack of community involvement over recent times. That's pretty obvious from what you're saying. Do you think that the domestic community around the Central Coast are still there and enthusiastic about supporting the club, or do you think that disconnect has moved away too far?
I think it's still there just. So the community engagement wasn't there, but then last year the owner, after I stepped down and went on council and became the mayor, I was a club ambassador and I resigned last year in about November because the owner was threatening. Basically what he did, he came out and said, if you don't get behind us, get to games, we're going to move more games to North Sydney Oval. And he came to me as the mayor and the ambassador and said, we want to move between 4 and 6 games, come out and support us. And I told him to shove it. I said, no, I can't do that. As a fan, as an ambassador, and as the mayor. So there were a real back off to the fans because he was trying to threaten people. And people on the coast, if you start threatening, they just go, well, go. You know, take it away. And then, so the crowds dropped to, they were getting about 5,000-6,000 people. And then I started Stand Up for the Mariners last December with one of the fans group, the Yellow Army. And we got 6,500 against Brisbane, 6,300 against Brisbane. We run this campaign for about 4 or 5 weeks because we were away from home all those games and never won one. The next game against Brisbane in the December, we got over 10,500. So we got an increase of about 3,500 people. And I went back to the club and said, do you not think you should come out and thank the fans for doing Stand Up for the Mariners? And the owner came back to me and said, well, it wasn't a club initiative. Why should we thank the fans? And I just said, look, don't worry about it. And basically, since that day, I walked away. And it's potentially there. But if it keeps going down much further than it's going now, the people are just disinterested. And over the last few months, it's been one saga after another saga. And then the Donovan incident, the headbutt the other night there. I know the club screaming about 8 weeks was too much for it. But, you know, if you didn't at the street, you get arrested for headbutting somebody like that at the street.
We're talking to Laurie McKenna, founding coach of the Central Coast Mariners, on Box to Box and on NTS News Talk Sport. Dean Hennessy, good friend of Laurie McKenna, you're joining us in this interview. What have you got to say on this?
Yeah, Laurie, I mean, I think, you know, just what you've just gone through there, it must be really disappointed from, you know, from what you've, the journey you've had at the club and that connect with the community to see it in the position it is right now.
Big time is because, look, I was there for 5 years and it wasn't all plain sailing, but we were successful on the park and then I went away and came back again. And because of my success on the park, when I stuck my hand up for council, which I had no interest in, but was kind of talked into it. And then I became the mayor. It was only because of my success on the park and just my popularity in the community, because the boys, everywhere people went, the players were there, and they were there. The big thing is, Dean, players can go to promos. You've done it yourself. Fans and people know when players don't want to be there. They can feel that engagement. They can turn up at a function and see the players don't want to be there, the players don't engage, and that's as bad as not sending any players. And in the early days, the fans, I was the first one there, you know, I was leading through the front and the players followed, and we had a great time on the coast. That first 3 or 4 years on the coast, the place was buzzing and we had sellout crowds in the finals, and, you know, they've not had a sellout since season 3. Even when Army was there, we couldn't sell the place out, but early doors when the engagement was there, it certainly worked, and the club can work, but under the current structure just now, it's just the CEO, John Mackay, who was there from day one, he got let go after year 8, and in the last 2.5 years since he's been gone, that's when the management issues at the club have came through, because there's definitely been a lack of leadership there.
Cool. course. Now, listen, we want to bring come back to Central Coast, but I just want to take you back a little way, in fact, a long way, 30 years ago when we first met and we were teammates at Boxer when you came out from Scotland. And then after that season together, your debut with Heidelberg, we were playing in a pre-season cup and ended up marking you. So it's I can't believe it's 30 years.
Well, 30 years this year.
It is.
You know, I can remember my days at Box Hill. You know, I came out from Scotland. I finished the season with Kilmarnock in Scotland and then arrived at Box Hill and met him. We had a great time and the club was fantastic for our family. And I think I scored a few goals in my part season with Box Hill and then went to Heidelberg. And I can remember, I think, is it the Buffalo Cup?
Buffalo Cup.
Olympic Park, I remember that, playing against you and Big Davo at the back. And, you know, we had a great time in Melbourne. We were there for about a year and three quarters before I got sold to Apia and moved up here. But we always classed ourselves as Melbournians because we came here and that was the first couple of years we had in Australia.
We're running around at Olympic Village, Laurie. I bet you didn't think you were going to be the mayor of Gosford at one stage.
When I was getting old, Makina, not a bad player, but too big in the legs. The Greeks really used to like my big backside and my big legs. But nah, definitely. Up until 3 and a bit years ago, I never thought I'd be the mayor of Gosford either. So I can assure you that. But it's been it's very much, people say, what's it like, football coaching? I said, it's the same. You're dealing with people. You're managing people, and you've got a lot of backstabbers after you. So it's very, very similar to football.
Well, one last question on the Central Coast, because you are the mayor of Gosford. Tell me how important the Mariners are to Gosford. From the mayor's point of view, not the ex-coach, not the founding coach, not all of the involvement you had, but as the mayor of Gosford, how important are the Mariners to the town?
They're huge for the town. The brand awareness which it brings to the coast. You know, they're our only national team. They'll be our only, we'll never ever get another national team. So this is it. We need to keep this here. It's great. When they travel all over Asia, and Australia, it brings credibility to the Central Coast. And it's a huge flagship for us, and it's very important for us. And it gives, when you get 14, 15,000 aspiring football players, we've got a pathway, we've got quality kids. We need the club on the coast.
That's dead set, Laurie. And as a boy who grew up in the western suburbs of Sydney, where the closest water views were the Guildford Pool, our family used to holiday on the Central Coast, mate, at places like Booker Bay, Berkeley Vale, the Entrance, Terrigal.
Beautiful
absolutely
places.
Absolutely gorgeous places. Yeah. And they sit alongside of the great destinations, holiday destinations of anywhere in Australia. And as you say, if we can advertise the Central Coast through the Asian Champions League, as you did through four seasons in that competition, then the broader view of the Central Coast involved in the A-League, it takes a different context altogether, doesn't it?
Definitely. And one of the things we did just over a year ago, we got the Socceroos to come here in a training camp before they went to the World Cup. People said, why are you trying to get the Socceroos here? I mean, all the press in the world who are going to the World Cup were wanting to know where the Socceroos were. We had them here for about 10, 12 days. It was brilliant for the town. We had open training sessions. The place was buzzing. We're now working on getting the Wallabies to come to town. And well, there are now some rumours that the V8s are going to come to town next year rather than go to Sydney. So we're doing a lot of things to try and attract the spotlight on the coast and show how great, as you said, you used to come here on holidays. But I'm 2 minutes away from the beach, Terrigal Beach, and I've got my brother and sister-in-law from Scotland here, and they walk down there every day and go, like, you could be anywhere in the world. This is as good as anywhere in the world, you know, but basically it's because they've got a good mayor in town, that's all. I'm just joking with that one. I get blamed when there's seaweed on the beach and I walk down there, punters come up and go, oh, what can the council do about getting the seaweed off the beach?
Good on you, mate. Hey, Laurie, thank you so much, mate. It's been a great chat, and no doubt we'll have you on the show again in the future. And if Laurie McKinnon's got anything to do with it, there will be a long future for the Central Coast Mariners in the A-League.
Cheers, guys. Good talking to you.
Great to talk to you. Laurie, news is next.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
And this hour we talk to former Australian Test and One Day International star Macquarie Radio commentator Carl Rackerman about the explosion of the cricket Big Bash and how its summer rivalry with football is affecting the A-League. Ben Soro Perez will be in with his weekly European wrap. And before we end the show, Mark Van Aken and Stoppage Time to wrap up all the stories, quirky and otherwise, that we haven't got to. But first up, Lou Sticker. After a stint as founder and CEO of Carlton in the old NSL, in 2000 Lou moved into player management and international tours to Australia of some of the game's mega clubs. Since then, his success has been staggering. He's the man behind bringing Dwight York and Alessandro Del Piero to Sydney FC, as well as Cingiano to the Wanderers. He's also arranged the tours of Liverpool, Chelsea, Juventus and Spurs. So when it comes to the future of the A-League, his insights are amongst the most credible in the game. Welcome to Box, Lou.
Thank you.
Lou, it's fantastic to have you on board. We pride ourselves in this program in delving into the things that are important off the field and business related to the A-League. I know that if you've got an interest in the A-League, everybody would have read your blog recently where you talked about a number of items that that could improve the A-League and maybe that the A-League has been getting a bit stale. The first one that I want to talk about is marquee players. You've got a track record second to none in relation to that. Are the clubs at the moment doing enough to bring marquee players to our competition to grow the game?
Well, it's a tough question to answer because I suppose to answer that effectively, you'd have to really look at what is a marquee. And I think the word and what we've actually got is very different. I suppose when the league was set up 11 years ago, the whole concept of a marquee player was someone that would impact the game on and off the park. And over the 11 and or 10 and a half years of the competition so far, I think we've seen some years where that's worked really well and others where it hasn't. But where we find ourselves now is that between clubs bringing in, I tend to view it more like an accounting exercise, to be completely frank, where I see it as purely a way of getting players outside of the salary cap into the squad. If you look at an article that was out a couple of days ago or a week ago, where I think one of the Herald Sun reporters, David Davutovic, had estimated that $10 million in this current season is being spent on marquees, and I just don't see any value in any of the marquees that are supposed to represent value on and off the park. I'm sure that there are players that fall under the marquee banner that are doing a good job for their coach and for the team. But I think that what we expect from a marquee is someone that's going to grab mainstream media attention, is going to drive people through the turnstiles and drive television ratings. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we don't get those KPIs, if, for instance, TV ratings, I mean, our league is going into a renegotiation for a further 4 or 5 year period, and yet, you know, our ratings are not, nothing to write home about. So the end game is going to be that it makes FFA's job harder to get more money. Club owners are expecting more money, and so who's going to invest in bringing these marquee players? So it's a long-winded answer, but as it stands today, I'm very disappointed in the whole marquee concept. I think it's been watered down significantly. It's been used as an accounting exercise, and you've got Australian marquees, foreign marquees. I mean, it's wishy-washy.
Lou, it might be a long answer, but it's an answer that encapsulates a lot of the issues that go around. And what it tells me is that there's a real chicken or egg issue going on here. And later on in the show, we've got Carl Rackerman to talk to us about the Big Bash. And we're expecting to talk about the showbiz elements, the affordability, those sorts of things. And they're elements of sport that you seem to understand, the ability to put on the pizzazz, the entertainment value. And in that is the element of the marquee player, but also is the element of filling stadiums with affordable ticket prices, so that when TV executives watch full stadiums, they think, hang on, there's something going on here. Maybe we should get on board with this, and we won't just park this sport in the pay TV environment. We might have a go at it on a free-to-air environment, and the build it when they will come scenario starts to eventuate.
Absolutely, and I think this is, again, when the league was set up 11 years ago, it was they'd set the bar fairly high. It required investors to have significant access to capital, and it was all about building something long-term. Now, over the course of the journey, a lot of clubs have fallen into ownership models that make it very difficult for those that own some of the clubs to keep up, and perhaps they themselves need to review their own individual club structures and perhaps follow the one club that's pretty much got it right from day one, and that's Melbourne Victory, who have a multi-tiered ownership structure. In a sense, you know, we use the word marquee, but they're probably our only marquee club in that they don't probably need a big name overseas foreigner to come in to fill the stands because they're doing it anyway. So they're probably the only club at this point in time that have built themselves into such a good position because they've got strong ownership, a strong business structure. They've got incredible crowds, incredible membership. You know, they are the best advertisement that the A-League has got, but some of the others, I feel sorry for some of the owners because, you know, people work really hard to feed their families, and when they take on an investment like something, you know, like a sports franchise, that you don't want to see some of the things that have happened to people like Con Constantine at the Jets and others who, Don Matheson up at North Queensland Fury, you know, people that start off with good intentions and end up losing the shirt off their back and the roof over their kids. From their kids' head, you know, it's terrible to see that happen. But perhaps some of that needs to be blamed on the admission process. And we're a small country. We've only got 23 million people. We're not like America that's got 300 million people and, you know, thousands of multimillionaires and billionaires. We've got a very finite supply of people that can afford to own a football club and pump millions of dollars in. Because they can afford to do it, you know. So we've got a lot of growing pains. But if I can just divert for a sec, you mentioned the Big Bash. I actually believe that they saw the success of the Alessandro Del Piero impact on TV ratings a couple of years ago, and I really believe that the VBL actually copied the whole concept of marquees, but they've gone on with it and they've done it right across the board and they've done it really, really well. And they've really ramped up their product. Having said that, you know, and I like cricket and I like a lot of sports, but football and the A-League is, you know, football is a game of authenticity. I think Test cricket is what the purists have grown up with, and BBL is just very much a television product. It's a short, sharp league. It's a lot of showbiz. I think the football fan demands something a little bit more authentic, and so I wouldn't want to see us go the BBL model, but certainly we can learn a lot from how they've been able to pick up the marquee concept and run it along with many other things that they do.
You're listening to Box to Box with Michael Edgley and Rob Gilbert on News Talk Sport on digital radio and streaming on the NTS app. You can also search for NTS on the TuneIn radio. And we're talking to Lou Sticker, owner of Tribal Sports Group, an iconic football figure in the past in the old NSL and currently with the A-League. Lou, I want to just do a little bit of a segue in the next question and ask you to reflect on your thoughts about promotion and relegation, the authenticity of football and the fans that follow it all around the world. There's always as much interest in who's getting relegated as to who's winning the championship. I think your views are very relevant. There is a missing link currently in our A-League structure by having no promotion and relegation. So how can we achieve and how can we bring back the magic that used to be in the old NSL around the relegation battles, which were incredible games. How can we bring that magic back to the A-League?
Well, OK, having lived through the NSL and made the move across with so many others to the A-League, first and foremost, what we've got today is something that we only dreamed of 15 years ago.
Absolutely.
We've now actually got a sport that sits in the mainstream category. Whether it's at the bottom of, you know, the top five or six sports is irrelevant. The fact is football is now an Australian mainstream sport. So I don't want to undermine the progress that's been made in any way, shape or form. I think what I'd like to see, and in that article that was put out a few weeks ago, only half of the articles, of my actual initial article, was actually picked up. What I said is that I'd like to see the league expand to 12 or 14 teams or whatever the optimum number is. Only the experts can determine that. I do think that 10 is now perhaps a little bit stale, and I think that there are many, there are so many thousands of fans, players, coaches, administrators that are not involved in the 10 club competition that we've got at the moment, and perhaps we could easily sustain another 2 to 4 clubs introduced over a period of time. I'm not suggesting that we go from 10 to 14 or 10 to 16 overnight, but perhaps a medium plan where we get to an optimum number. Once we've reached that optimum number, I think that the logical progression is then to establish a second division, and a further progression to that the second division would be to then introduce promotion and relegation. Now, the game across most places in the world has got promotion and relegation. I think off the top of my head, probably the two or three leagues, MLS and ourselves, and I'm sure that there's one or two others out there, but I can't think of them. Everywhere else has got promotion and relegation, and it is an integral part of the fabric of football. We are a unique situation. I followed the game when we had promotion and relegation, and what we've got to be very careful of is that given our population is very sparse outside of the eastern seaboard, if unadulterated promotion and relegation was to come in over a period of time, I think you would find that you'd end up with the bulk of the teams based out of Sydney and Melbourne, and perhaps a few out of Brisbane. And that doesn't make for a good national competition. So what it then means is you've got to put safety nets in place to ensure that, you know, if a team goes out from a particular state, that at some point or another that state is then represented. And hence the whole purpose of having a promotion and relegation. It's not a free example like it is in most other parts of the world. We'd have to be very, very careful and put a lot of precautions in place to ensure that we didn't end up with Sydney and Melbourne being the bulk of the competition. The other thing that we've also got to be very conscious of is that of the existing 10 clubs, 9 of those have long-term licences, and whether that was right or wrong, the people that paid significant money to get those long-term licences, they've got security of tenure. There are contracts in place, but, you know, you just can't all of a sudden, someone's paid X amount of dollars and thinks he's got a 20, 25-year competition, and then finds that, he gets relegated as soon as a relegation is brought in. You know, you'd have legal issues all over the place. So I certainly don't. I certainly respect what FFA and the things that they have to do to accommodate all these wishes that all of us have on the outside. I'm certainly not jealous of the work that they've got to do. But I think, if from a wish list point of view, I would like to see the league expand. I would then like to see a second division, and then promotion and relegation. Now, that whole process might be a 20-year process. Could be 10, could be 15, could be 20. Again, you know, it's pie in the sky at this point in time. And FFA has to work with people like our television partners, and they would play a very important role in how they view this as well. So it's not an easy job. And, you know, we're not a traditional market. you don't have any other country in the world with so much land and, you know, so few cities and such a sparse population in the bulk of the country, and hence that creates problems.
Lou, it's been fantastic to listen to your insights, and the one thing I think we can take from that is that that the conversation started, the dialogue has begun in the football community, and that the passion and the interest from the traditional football supporter and administrator and manager is such that it will eventually happen. Just as a matter of when it does happen is the moot point. And fortunately, at least we've got the FFA Cup to bring some of those clubs into the spotlight and give them their day in the sun and just show them what opportunities there are there to get involved in the main competition when eventually that happens.
Well, I think, you know, from to sum it all up, I mean, the fact that so many people want to see others come into it, that tells you that there's a real appetite for the game. So I agree with you. It's not a question of if it will happen. It's only a question of when.
Lou Sticker, it's been fantastic to talk to you. I hope to talk to you again real soon. And after the break, former Australian Test and One Day International star Carl Rackerman, he's going to come along and give us his thoughts on what the A-League can learn from the success of the Big Bash, as we've just discussed with Lou right now.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back. Our next guest is a little off the normal box-to-box radar, but with the Big Bash dominating the sporting conversation over summer, some insights from the cricket world as to what the A-League can do to learn from their success at the shortest form of Australia's traditional summer game is vital. Carl Rackerman played 12 tests for Australia and 52 one-day internationals during his playing days, but the big Queenslander was always a crowd favourite. These days he combines working on the family farm in Kingaroy with commentating duties on Macquarie Radio's Summer of Cricket. Thanks for joining us, Carl.
Yeah, hi, how's it going?
Yeah, really good, mate. And Carl, whilst cricket has been your lifetime sport of choice and the sport you made your career in, you as a boy with your dad, you were just like many of the other Australian sporting enthusiasts and watched Match of the Day with your dad and developed a real passion for Arsenal over the years.
Yeah, well, that's right. I think it was every Sunday afternoon. The Match of the Day was Jimmy Hill, was that his name?
That's right.
It was Jimmy somebody. And you'd get three British matches, sort of condensed highlights. And back then, Arsenal and Leeds used to have a fair few titanic battles. And so just for the sake of rivalry, I got to take a liking to Arsenal, and my dad, just for the sake of it, decided he was a Leeds man, and Billy Bremner and Peter Lorimer and those guys. And so, yeah, I just loved watching it then. I was just a real little youngster and sort of always kept in touch and followed it. And I was really lucky in 1989 on the Ashes Tour. Ian Botham took myself and a couple of other guys to Highbury, and we saw Arsenal play, I think it was Norwich, and Arsenal dusted them up, I think it was 5-0, so it was a pretty exciting day. But yeah, that's, so I've always had an eye on the global, the world game, and yeah, like, I really enjoy it, and it's great to see. You talk about the A-League, it's also the Socceroos, how in the last, 15, 20 years, how they've just grown in stature the whole way. So, yeah, it's good times for soccer, isn't it? Or football, sorry. I'm used to saying soccer. That's
you're
what
allowed
I was
to,
when
Carl.
I was young.
It gets mentioned on this show plenty of times, mate. That's all good. Now, mate, on to the main reason that we invited you onto the show this evening, Carl. The emergence of the Big Bash is one of the real success stories over the last several years in Australian sport. It seems to have taken even the promoters of the game by storm. You go back to the MCG on the weekend just gone, where they had 80,000 people and planned for around 50,000. There were queues going back over a kilometre. We're talking from the point of view of the A-League, having been in the place for around 11 years now and watching with interest just how successful the Big Bash has become over a few years. Are there any elements to the Big Bash and its success that you see as sort of intrinsic or generic across various other sports, including football?
Well, there's a lot of detail I don't know about other sports, but I remember the very first, we're in Big Bash 5 now, Big Bash 1, when the Brisbane Heat lined up to play its very first game, and it was bordering on a disaster because they didn't know how many to expect. They thought, well, if we get 10,000 into the Gabba, we'll be really excited with that for the first game. And so they did things like, well, we'll budget for a crowd, we'll be excited with 10, but let's say we get organised in case there's 14, and they opened enough of the ground to handle that, and they had enough catering organised for that, but it meant that two-thirds of the ground was shut down. And they were only going to utilise enough of the ground to handle 14,000. Well, 27,000 people turned up, I think, something ridiculous like that. And you can imagine, and the people are all queuing up down the street. They can't get in. There's not enough gates open. They couldn't get a drink when they got in, and it was a shambles. But luckily, it didn't put the people off. And from then, Brisbane Heat had to work out that they had to be prepared for any sort of size crowd, and that's pretty much been a standard crowd. Every time they play, it's somewhere in the high 20s, has been 32, I think's their best. It's just remarkable. And then we saw in Melbourne the other night, 80,000, and they weren't expecting that. They thought this could be big. It's the local derby. And I think they were thinking, gee, if we got 40 or 50, that'd be really something. And it would have been. And lo and behold, 80,000 have turned up. And it was the same problem. They had sections of the ground wasn't open. They didn't have staff on gates. And that people were blowing up. They didn't see the first ball, and they're in queues outside. So it's caught them by surprise, this incredible response and public support of the Big Bash. But it's an amazing thing, and as you say, it's taking a bit to get your head around how successful it really has been and become.
We're talking to Carl Rackerman on Box to Box NTS News Talk Sport with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. And Edge, you've got a couple of other questions that you want to ask, Carl?
Well, Carl, what do you put down the phenomenon that is Big Bash? You know, you just talked about the under expectations of crowds. I mean, what do you think is the magic ingredient that's made it so popular right around the country? Sellout crowds in Perth, sellout crowds in Adelaide. You know,
Adelaide, 40,000 and 50,000 every game.
So, what are the ingredients that make it so popular, and how can football learn from it?
Well, look, the game itself is so entertaining. It's action and it's entertaining, but there's also great theatre. And when you get to mostly, sometimes the team will just fall over, and whether it's first innings or second innings, and then the result's pretty much known way before the scheduled end. But as a general rule, you're getting to the last five overs of the second team's batting, And both teams are still in with some chance. And so the excitement of the game and of the contest is riveting. So I think that's a really big part of it. And it's the way it's set up on the night. There's all sorts of bells and whistles, and the Brisbane Heat have that the guy, what's his name, he flies across the ground with a jet man or something, whatever he's called, across the ground at half time every time, which is pretty impressive stuff. And they've got fire being set off above, big fire blasts above the side screens, and it's a real extravaganza in terms of the showmanship that the event provides. But it's entertaining, and it's the whole family gets along, and it's affordable. I think one of the really big things is the price of tickets. Now, I don't know what it costs to get into other sporting events of any sports around the place, but I think it's $20 for an adult. Now, I could be way off the mark here, but I know.
No, you're not, Carl. I was there the other day at the MCG. I took three boys along and myself, so these three 14-year-olds. I paid $8 a head for each of the boys and $25 for myself
MCG. Yeah. So it's affordable, and I think in the modern day, that's a really big deal, that things have become unaffordable, haven't they? Tickets to go to Test cricket as expensive. And we saw this year Test cricket reducing the ticket prices as the summer went on in some of the venues. So the ticket pricing's a real issue, and I think everyone's got to be mindful of the fact that not everyone's got bottomless pockets to keep spending on sport. So I think the affordability is quite a big part of it, and they really promote and market the sides, and we've got these exciting overseas players, but we're also seeing some of the biggest players in the comp. They're all Australians, and they're showing us some unheralded players, not the big names that you see every week in Test cricket, but for the likes of Chris Lynn from the Brisbane Heat, his hitting ability is unbelievable. So just to name one. So there's a whole lot of things in it, but I think the excitement of being there, the event, it's affordable, it's non-stop entertainment. It's a real special, it's a pretty special type of event that I think has caught everybody by surprise, exactly how exciting it is and how much the public have really embraced it and they love it.
That's fantastic, Carl. It sounds like you've encapsulated in a handful of isolated points, whether it be affordability, whether it be excitement, whether it be a family-friendly environment, that they're some of the things that the local domestic competition can learn from. Because if there's one thing for sure, if you take it for granted, then the crowds won't come. They'll only come if you put the entire package on them. Carl, mate, it's been fantastic. We really appreciate you giving us an inside view from an outside point of view, and mate, we hope to talk to you again at some stage down the track on Box to Box.
Yeah, sure thing. Happy to do so. Thank you.
Good on you, Carl. That was Carl Rackerman on Box to Box. Ben Soro Perez and his roundup of football in Europe next.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app. You can also search for NTS on TuneIn Radio.
And you can listen to our podcast anytime. Anytime you want to listen to it, just go to boxtoboxnts.com.au.
That was boxtoboxnts.com.au.
Anytime. You can listen to Ben Soro Perez, all his going way back. Check him out. It's fantastic.
You've ruined his great intro, mate. I was just about to launch into his great intro, and you've already done it. So, Benny, welcome
Makes
back.
Sense.
The Brighton and Hove Albion insider, the man himself. There's no Premier League this weekend. It's an FA Cup weekend, but there's still plenty to talk about. Pep Guardiola, how would you feel if you were Louis van Gaal or one of the other coaches under the cosh, with Pep coming out with his remarks during the week?
I think if you're van Gaal, you may be slightly perturbed by it, but I think the situation of the club means the likelihood of him going to United is very slim. I think Guardiola's got more interesting options available, and I think Van Gaal, well, if things continue, he'll be lucky to get to the end of the season anyway.
Mm.
But yeah, Guardiola came out last week and said, you know, that the reason he hasn't renewed at Bayern is because he wants to be in the Premier League. And, you know, having a quick think about it before, you know, coming on air, at the clubs that would want him and could potentially afford, obviously, what is going to be a crazy salary. You're kind of left with four. I mean, Liverpool don't need one. They've got Jurgen Klopp in now, and you think he's going to be given time. So it's Arsenal, Chelsea, City and United. I mean, you know, what would you, if you're Pep Guardiola, which one of those appeals to you?
The one with the big money, Chelsea perhaps. City seem to have already made the decision on Pellegrini. Arsenal, they seem to be rusted on to Arsene Wenger. He's going to go out of there in a pine box. So I would have thought perhaps Chelsea's the one edge.
Yeah, live in London.
Mm. Yeah, I kind of thought that myself, but I think for someone who craves a bit of stability, I think the turnover at Chelsea is going to put him off. I think, obviously, great place to live, great opportunity, but you look at the squad, Terry's going to need replacing.
It's a good opportunity, isn't it? Young.
It is, but you look at what he had to work with at Barcelona and what he's worked with at Bayern.
But he can turn the squad over in a period of time. You know, it's a no-brainer.
Ah, I don't know. I think his connections at City, Ferran Soriano's there, and Chigi Bogoristan, I can never say his name.
And probably more money at City.
There is, but I think you walk into a much better squad. You get Sergio Aguero, who, when fit, there's not many players you know, of his calibre. You've got Raheem Sterling, you've got endless backing, rapidly expanding. I just think that that's, for me, that's the most likely job. You know,
and the thing with City is that that squad seems to perform regardless of whether the coach is under pressure or not, as opposed to what we saw with Chelsea, who seemed to just lie down and not be interested in anything but their paycheck.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, City have come, well, they came unstuck against Everton in the League Cup semi-final the other night. It wasn't perhaps their best performance, but, you know, strength in depth, there's no obvious need to go in there and start replacing squad members and all the rest of it. There's a good foundation. So for me, I think, you know, that's where potentially he's going to end up, and I think that's partly due to the connections from his days at Barcelona there. But yeah, other than that, it's FA Cup weekend, this one, third round, I think, and ready to go.
I've got a couple of games that I want your comments on, Ben.
Oh, great.
I have. Manchester United and Sheffield United, that's a bit of a game of the ages, isn't it? Back in the old days, Sheffield United, when they were up in the First Division, that would have been a reasonable game, but you'd expect Manchester United, they're probably going to rest a few, but you expect them to win.
You'd expect
a lot.
Entire shadow side.
You would have said that last year when they played, was it Preston North End? And Man Hull rested loads of people and they lost four.
Beat.
Yeah, they lost by four. So you can't write off Sheffield United. And the strength and depth at United at the minute is certainly not of the calibre that you would have expected or gotten used to under Ferguson. So I think that's, if he doesn't field a full strength team, I think, you know, United, well, Sheffield United will be confident.
And another game of the ages, Ipswich Town and Portsmouth. A couple of famous clubs going back there. I have no idea of the form there, but you're our European insider, so what's going to happen there?
Yeah, no, I'm not 100% on the form at the minute. I know Ipswich went down and beat Brighton away a couple of weeks back. Obviously, Portsmouth FA Cup winners under Harry Redknapp not too long ago. Yeah, the club's fallen by the wayside since then, and they are, you know, still working their way back. But I think you'd have to look at Ipswich. You know, Mick McCarthy is he's a pretty resolute man. His teams play a certain style of football, and it's unusual that you'll see them get turned over or lose a game that they should probably win. So I think you look at this.
Well, I can help you out there, gentlemen. Ipswich Town are on 41 points in the promotion zone in the Championship, and Portsmouth are not doing particularly poorly in League 2 in the promotion zone.
League 2 is the point.
Exactly. But they are not far away from going up another division, and it ought to be a competitive game. So,
but we always love pulling out a fairy tale story, and obviously the fairy tale story so far, I think, in this FA Cup, Newport County.
Yeah, you'd expect Blackburn there. I mean, it's all well and good fairy tales, but obviously it's not going to roll on forever. The Blackburn aren't necessarily the force that they once were, but even away from home, you've got to look at this and think that they'll have far too much for them.
Any other marquee fixtures in the FA Cup?
Well, there's a couple of all Premier League fixtures, which we've had a bit of fun here with Ben picking out some of the lesser fixtures, but obviously Southampton and Crystal Palace.
Yeah, that's a big one. Palace, they were taken apart by Chelsea last week, I think, lost 3-0. Comparatively, Southampton went down to Norwich, had Vincent Wenyama sent off, I think, as well. So it's neither team is perhaps playing particularly well, but on their day, you know, both pretty lively going forward, plenty of pace and attack and what have you. I think playing at home will be the advantage here, so I'd expect, you know, Ronald Koeman's side to...
One-word answers, Watford, Newcastle United.
Watford.
That's enough for me, really.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up the FA Cup. Now, before we go back into the Premiership next week, anything to expect before the second half of the season starts to roll around?
Oh, not as far as I'm aware of. I think January is key for a lot of clubs in the transfer window and what is available. You know, there was, I think perhaps the most interesting thing I found or I noted this week was the chief executive of Adidas coming out and criticising that while they're happy with the shirt sales they're getting from United, it's not necessarily the style of football that they wanted or that they'd like to see, which is quite the criticism. I mean, obviously they're making a lot of money and they've invested a lot. But if your shirt manufacturer is getting on your back, that suggests that there's a lot more pressure on Van Gaal that perhaps.
Yeah,
you know,
it's almost like they're loading the gun, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so.
And Jamie Vardy's injury, does that hurt Leicester to the point where it could be a banana skin that many have been expecting for their season?
Not necessarily. I don't think so. I don't think it's been 100% confirmed how long he's out for. But if anything, perhaps it's a blessing. I think he's the top goal scorer in the league. Clubs are looking at him. Maybe, you know, this takes him out of the shop window. He's not immediately available. cheaper alternatives maybe elsewhere. Not ideal for Leicester, but I don't think it derails them as such.
Excellent, Benny, mate. We'll talk to you again next week. Next up, Stoppage Time with Mark Van Aken.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You've been with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley for the last couple of hours, but before we wrap it up, Stoppage Time, one of our favourite segments of the evening with Mark Van Aken, the fourth official, signals there's 8 minutes to go. What's on in Stoppage Time, mate?
Well, let's go back to Central Coast. It's been a bit of a Mariners-themed episode. Of course, Michael Hughan talking about Roy O'Donovan, the famous headbutting incident, Laurie McKenna. This club, guys, you've touched on it during the show, they're rudderless. They've shut the door on the prospect of signing former Greece striker Georgios Samaras.
He hasn't played nearly the whole year.
But hang on. There's a couple of points with this guy. He's a free agent, so you're not paying money to get him here. And he also holds an Australian passport, so he's not taking a visa spot.
Mm, true.
So what I don't understand is, where is the reluctance to get this guy in? Central Coast clearly it's some dollars. I just wonder, given this guy's appeal in a city like, there's a few Greeks in Melbourne, isn't it?
One or two.
Half a million ethnic Greeks in Australia. The biggest Greek population in the world outside of Athens, bigger than any other city in Greece. A few Greeks in Sydney too. Do you reckon there's a city that, I've already just ruined that. There's a club that rhymes with pity that might be maybe having a look at this guy?
Yeah, well, it would make sense, wouldn't it, if he's in good
No,
form,
they've got a very good marquee player,
Robbie Coram.
Yeah. But he's not the marquee
he's a superstar.
Player.
Are you taking the? Yes, you are taking the urine. Good.
This guy. Just in case you didn't understand what Mark was talking about, I was taking the Mickey.
I just feel there's a place for this guy. He's still quite young. Yeah, he hasn't had a great couple of years since leaving Celtic. He's sort of bobbled around the world, but he's the kind of bloke I would take a dig on. Ronaldinho has basically been suited by 5 A-League clubs. No one has done it. Guys, what's it going to take? I mean, we spoke to Lou about this. Where are the big names? We need to bring them back. And does there need to be a central fund? Because
one of the items we didn't get a chance to sort of quiz Lou about because of the time, I think there's been very strong... He made the comparison about the Big Bash League. I think there's been very strong leadership from Cricket Australia about the marquees providing funding for those. I didn't get a clear answer out of Lou in terms of who is responsible for the leadership of driving the marquee player scenarios in the A-League. Is it the club chairman? Is it the clubs? Or is it the FFA through its A-League management?
Key word there is leadership. I think we've seen a lack of that, and I think we all agree with that, coming out of whether it's De Bowen, whether it's Gallup, or whether it's one of the lowies at the top. But there's obviously been a lot of stuff going on in Australian football. There's been the World Cup bid. They've now got Newcastle to deal with, Brisbane. There's lots of issues. It's not easy, but there clearly now needs to be the time. With the Big Bash League kicking goals or hitting sixes, should probably be the analogy we use. The NBL is up and about and refreshed this season. And the A-League, I don't think it's unsalvageable, but it does need a new lick of paint.
No, I can't understand why the FFA cannot grasp the concept that making football affordable for families is a simple solution. We need to put bums on seats. If you put bums on seats, you get extra theatre inside the stadiums. The players tend to naturally lift when there's big crowds, and TV executives watch. They see big crowds, they see better performances, and they pay more money for TV dollars. Is it that hard to work out, or am I missing something?
I don't disagree with you, Rob, but I still think you go back to John O'Neill's comments when he first took over, and he made the famous address at the National Press Club, and he sort of had that throwaway line, mainstream football was not. And that's what the A-League was all about. And for a short period of time, the A-League did become a mainstream sport in Australia. And football is definitely a mainstream sport with what we've seen last night with the Liverpool legends drawing, looks like about 40-odd thousand out there at ANZ for what was just a glorified park match, basically. We've seen what happens at the ICC Cup. We've seen millions go through the gates for the Asian Cup. So football is mainstream. But the A-League at the moment, in my opinion, Mike, is basically only appealing really to the real hardcore fans of the clubs, of the Victory, of Sydney FC. But for the neutrals, people that don't have a club, someone like me, now because I work in the industry, okay, I'm invested. But if I didn't, I tell you what, it's just not on that radar. That's where it needs to get to. And don't forget, Big Bash League, turn on Channel 10 every night of the week it's on. I mean, I don't watch it. It's not my thing. But I know all my mates do. And that's where we need to get back in the shop window. We've spoken about it in previous weeks. We can't even get the A-League on SBS 1, let alone SBS 2. But I'm convinced more than ever now with the success of the Big Bash League that we need to get ourselves on one of those big three commercial networks in some form.
Absolutely. It's highlighted the challenges for the FFA and their management. I think they're on notice. The fans understand the issues in much more detail than anybody anticipates. We know that. Free-to-air for the next TV deal is an absolute must. And it's got to be real stuff too. it's got to be real coverage. There's got to be magazine programs. There's got to be promotion. That's what the what Channel 10 provides for the Big Bash. That's going to be a difficult deal to deliver, but it's, you know, it's up to the FFA management to get that over the line.
Now, a bit more news for you. Melbourne City have confirmed the signing of former Western Sydney Wanderers goalkeeper Dean Boutsanis, a former Liverpool man for a brief stint, as a replacement for Japan-bound shot stopper Tando Valapi. Boutsanis, who had fallen out at Wanderland following West Sydney coach Tony Popovich's move for ex-Mariners keeper Liam Reddy, sounds very confusing, doesn't it, has joined City until the end of the A-League season. Valapi had been City's number one, of course, in the second half of last season, but lost his place when they signed English Premier League veteran Thomas Sorensen this season. He has moved to the J-League, and he's over there because his mum's got a Japanese passport, so that's how he's managed to get himself in, because with all due respect to Tando, and he's about to say young, he's not that young anymore, he's 28 years old, but still a promising keeper, probably wouldn't get over there if he was taking up a visa spot, but he's lucky he's got the passport in his pocket.
Take
there,
take your luck where you can get it, mate.
Absolutely. Former Real Madrid president Raymond Calderon has told Sky Sports News Jose Mourinho was contacted by the club before they made Zinedine Zidane the head coach. Mourinho worked under current president Florentino Perez from 2010 to 2013 in the Spanish capital, and Calderon said Perez approached the former Chelsea boss about a return to the club following the decision to dismiss Rafa Benitez a couple of days back. Lads, I hate Real with a passion, but I must say I'm very excited to see what Zizou brings to the table as a gaffer at arguably the world's biggest club. It's going to be pretty exciting times, I think.
He comes in with a great pedigree as a player and as a headbutter, but not much.
I was going to say, will he graft in Royal Donovan?
as a coach, he was coaching the seconds team at the club and didn't set the world on fire there. But what do you think? Do we think he's going to become one of those superstar players, those rare superstar players who actually becomes a good coach? Or is he going to go down that same path of so many superstar players across various sports who fail miserably as a manager?
Rob, Zizou, absolutely, probably one of the best players of all time. I think he's got a few credits in the bank, mate.
I didn't question that. What I questioned was whether he's going to have the ability to bring a group together when, as a leader on the park, through his own example, he can do it. The question is, will he be able to do it as a communicator?
Yes.
That's the question that is yet to be answered.
I think he will. I think he's a gun. He'll get it done, as much as I hate to say it as a Barca man. Now, Australian and former Liverpool goalkeeper Brad Jones has signed with Dutch outfit NEC Nijmegen on a six-month deal. The Socceroos have been without club since being released.
You just throw that in because you want to pronounce it well.
And I mean, also, my family is from very close to Nijmegen.
That's right.
That's my point. The Socceroo had been without a club since being released early from his one-year contract with League One side Bradford in October. He played just 3 games in 3 months. Injuries to two of NEC's keepers, who I won't pronounce. One's a very Nordic one. Joshua Smits is the second one. That was easier. Has meant the club are desperate to add reinforcements to the squad. His first appearance could very well be on Jan 17 when they take on Willem II. And finally, because you give me the nudge there, Rob.
No, I was just going to say, do NEC have a big derby each year against Toshiba or Sony or something like that?
No. Suspended FIFA Secretary General Jerome Valk.
Maybe Phillips.
Well, that's PSV, of course, the big team there. So anyway, they love the letters in front of the names of the clubs in Holland. Jerome Valk's, of course, the vice president or the Secretary General. Jerome.
Good point. Thanks for bringing up
Very
Jerome.
Very good, Jerome. Provisional ban has been extended by 45 days. The executive chamber of FIFA's ethics committee extended the suspension. The good news here, boys, they're looking at fining him, banning him for 9 years and fining him 100,000 Swiss francs, which I think is about $7.
That.
He's unhappy about being banned for 9 years. We're not happy about him destroying our game for the last decade. But anyway, and his little creepy mate. But anyway, it's fine.
Well, he's in good company.
We've got good lawyers here, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And we're not available in Switzerland. So, Mark Van Aken, that's been stoppage time for another week. It's been a great show of Box to Box. We've had some magnificent fun. We've had a lot of wonderful guests. We look forward to talking to you all again next week when you join us on NTS News Talk Sport with Box to Box on The World Game.